I want to reprise the first four statements in the 91st Psalm and then move on through it in this hour. It is a song that was composed by David. Dod is his real name. It means beloved. It is part of a trilogy of psalms, as it is chronicled in the Qumran's collection above the Dead Seas, that was specifically written to fend off the ill effect of demonically inspired religious zealots. So it's written specifically to deal with what I was being asked to deal with: Islam, Christianity, Judaism. It is from Dod, and it begins from Dod. And it starts, one lives, one actually approaches and is genuinely settled, dwelling, established, and restored, abiding in the protective covering of the Most High, continually passing through the darkness in the shadow of the Almighty, who says in proximity to and to approach Yahweh, my trustworthy refuge, my reliable shelter from storms, from danger, and from falsehoods. My God, He is the constant one, the eternal, enduring, and unchanging one, the everlasting strength and perpetual preeminence, in whom I continually trust and genuinely rely, in whom I consistently put my confidence, and I am actually made secure. For indeed, He will always save you. Now, this is the marvelous thing about this. Dod is explaining this as it relates to him, but for our benefit. So he's saying, one lives who says this, because this is what he says, and he knows. He's speaking of his own experience, his own inspiration. He was always under attack by religious zealots, by political zealots, by military zealots. And he says, you want to endure that, you want to live through that, then those who say that Yahweh is my trustworthy refuge, that Yahweh is my strength, that He is the constant one, that He is unchanging, and in whom I'm going to constantly trust and rely, they're the ones who live, pass through this darkness of religion and politics and militarism. For indeed, He will always save you, always, consistently deliver you, spare you, rescuing you and defending you. If you engage in this process, this was scribed in the Hifl stem, which Yahweh is enabling us, encouraging us to engage in this process ourselves. And the imperfect, which speaks of that which is ongoing. For indeed, He will always save you from the snare of the enticer, from the trap and control of the one who lays down bait and lures into confinement, from the disease and plague associated with the malicious motives and destructive speech which will cause the devastation to come. Paul, the founder of the Christian religion, author of half the Christian New Testament, was an enticer. He is called the plague of death. His religion is a disease. His letters are malicious, as were his motives. His speech was destructive. The same is true with Muhammad, 600 years later, the founder of the Islamic religion. Everything that he said in his Quran and Hadith were communicated because of his own personal malicious motives, his capricious cravings, his inappropriate yearnings. And everything he said was destructive. Just look at the legacy of Islam today. Man's words, particularly political and militaristic, patriotic, and religious, are a disease, the most deadly disease ever perpetrated on humankind, a great plague, a pestilence, widespread death and destruction, emanate from these enticements. And they're always conveyed with malicious motives. The speech is destructive. Whether it be the nincompoops, words that we analyzed here in this program today from Hillary Rotten Clinton, or the Speaker of the House, Boehner, who said that George Bush, he would have punched Putin in the nose. Or the Secretary of State who said that it is illegal for the residents of Donetsk and Luhansk to vote for a government of their choosing. Matters not who you turn to in politics or religion, patriotism or militarism. Their words are the plague of death. Their speech is destructive. Their motives are malicious. If you want to endure those things, not join them, just endure the onslaught. There's only one way: to recognize who Yahweh is, to say to him, "You are my trustworthy refuge. You are the reliable one, the enduring one, the unchanging one. You are the one in whom I'm going to place my trust and in whom I'm going to genuinely rely." When we take that position, even in a world that is polluted and infected with the most deadly and malicious of diseases, human political and religious rhetoric, we can survive it. We will survive it. We can do something that is truly important. We can go into the pit of religious scriptures and study the Quran and study its hadith. We can go into the pit of religious testimony and analyze Paul's letters. We can go into the cesspool of politics and dissect their speech. And we can endure it. We can expose and condemn them even while walking through the valley of the shadow of death, in the midst of their evil. And we will come out unscathed. Because what we're doing is a marvelous service to Yahweh. To leave those who have been victimized by politics and religion without excuse. It is what God wants, and so he protects those who engage in this way. This was the message that he sent me some 13 years ago, when I was encouraged to expose and condemn Islam, and subsequently to expose and condemn Judaism and Christianity, as well as socialist secular humanism. He says, yeah, I understand. These religions are all the plague of death. These religions are all destructive. The motivations of the founders and the pontificators of these religious and political and military schemes are all malicious. And it's nasty in there. It's really filthy. It's contagious. It's deadly. It's destructive. It's deceitful. It's everything that you could possibly imagine that's horrible. But if you'll go there, if you'll investigate, if you'll explore, and share what you learn, exposing and condemning these human motives, this destructive speech, these enormously deadly plagues, I'll make sure you live through the experience. I'll protect you. So long as you rely on me. So long as you trust me. I'll protect you. Powerful statement. I mean, it gives me goosebumps. Now, God likes to get graphic. He likes to convey what he says, not only in a very high-minded, intellectual way, which is what we've just read, but also in a way that the smallest child can understand what he's saying. You know, you think of how fragile a baby bird is as it just comes out of the egg, can't fly, can't walk, can't take care of itself, can't protect itself, is totally, can't even handle the elements, has no way to get out of the rain or cold or wind. It's protected under its mother's wing, fed by its parents, cared for by its parents. And so God gives this example, and he does so in such a way that drives us to understand the paternal and maternal nature of what he's offering, of the way he's relating to us. He says, with his interwing, with Ebra being the protective covering symbolically associated with the inner joint of a mother bird's feathered wing, feminine noun, he will screen and cover you by her approach, chakak la, with direct contact, and by coming near, he will clothe and protect you with her arrival. This was written in the Hifl again, where the subject, God, enables the object, you and me, to engage and participate in the action, which is being protected, screened, and covered. And in the imperfect, which speaks of that which is ongoing and continuous for all time, and in the jussive, which expresses third-person desire. His and her are both in third person. So it's Yahweh's and the set-apart spirit's desire to do this. This is what they want to do. Remember when Yahusha said, you know, I wish that I, like a mother bird, could take Jerusalem and its inhabitants and care for them, nestle them under my wings and protect them and care for them. Well, that's his desire. It's Yahweh's desire. It's what he wants to do. It's what all loving parents want to do. And God says, if you're going to engage in the things that I think are important, the things that have genuine and lasting value, then rest assured, I will protect you. You will be under my wing. There is no better wing than Yahweh's. We'll be back. Getting graphic, giving us a visual picture of what God is offering to do in terms of offering his protection. He says, with his interwing, he will screen and cover you by her approach. And under his wing, again, wing being feminine, his extremity, and actually the word kanaf here is a different word for wing. You know, the first word for wing was ibra, which is that inner part of the wing where the wing hinges and pivots. And then he talks about the screen, this protective contact, clothing and protecting was ka'ak. And now we're in a third Hebrew word, all of which have to do with wing and covering and protecting. This one is kanaf. Kanaf is actually the extremity of a garment. It's also feminine. All three were feminine. And because what he's trying to do here is he says, you know, I've provided insights for you to understand throughout my Torah that the set-apart spirit has a garment of light, that she adorns you in this garment of light when you're spiritually born anew from above to be part of the covenant family. And that this garment of light makes you look perfect in my eyes. But beyond that, it's also a protective garment. And the very presence of the set-apart spirit, which is feminine, it's the Ruach Kodesh, it's the maternal manifestation of Yahweh's nature, that she enlightens us, she empowers us. It's the part of Yahweh that actually becomes part of us, enlightening us, empowering us, enriching us, protecting us, perfecting us. All of these things. So then he goes on to say, this feminine wing will continually and genuinely provide rest and comfort. It's the fact is that I was never stressed, ever, in this voyage of discovery through Islam and even through Christianity and Judaism or through socialist secular humanism. Never been stressed. Never sought to defend myself. Never ducked for cover. And we got into this as, you know, Paul was having his disciples put him in a basket and get in a fetal position and be flung out of a window and on a rope to get out of Dodge because the Jews were coming. No, my response is the exact opposite. I have no fear. No concern. God is, I'm working with Yahweh. Why would I be concerned? And I'm just not. You know, I'm relying on Him. He's created this universe. He's fully capable, always dependable, always reliable. And so He's providing this protection. It's not just protection. It's also empowerment. It's also a sense of comfort. You know, I've received hundreds upon hundreds of letters saying, you know, you're so courageous to have told the truth about Islam with so many people threatening to kill you. It's not courageous. You know, when you're under the protection of the Creator God of the universe, well, how is it that you're being courageous? Now, I give someone like IQ Al-Rasuli who doesn't know Yahweh great kudos for being courageous. It takes enormous courage and character and compassion for him to do what he does. For me, I'm just doing what Dad asked. No courage involved. It's very comfortable. And that's really the essence of moving to the point where you know Yahweh and you come to trust and rely on what he says because you understand what it is that he's communicating and offering. You just relax.
Quick question. When you originally started that, though, the condemning of Islam and that, mm-hmm. you didn't actually know who Yahweh was at that time, did you?
You know, it was during the first book that I came to know him. It's very much like Abraham and Moshe. They came to know him through the process where God, in both cases, made a request. And they started off reluctant, but then step by step agreed to do what he was asking. And in the process, they came to know him. It's a great question. Very much like that for me. I mean, I'm not putting myself in the same position as Abraham, whom Yahweh founded the covenant with, or with Moshe, with whom he revealed his Torah and freed his people from political and religious oppression. But the reason that Yahweh tells those stories that way, the reason he approached those people that way, is Yahweh is consistent. And so even though this mission was you know, insignificant by comparison to their mission, the exact same approach, you're right. I didn't know Yahweh at the time. I got to know him through the process. We worked together. We engaged together. I got to know him. And you know how I got to know him? I was encouraged in the process of writing Tewa Teres to study his testimony. And I was just amazed by the miraculous coming togethers of opportunities and assets to make this project possible. Before we move on with the 91st Psalm, I was speaking with Scott during the break, and just a little more time here on the process. And I can recall when I began this, and I was immediately directed, at least after the first week to 10 days of being in Israel, I was given the opportunity for the very thing that I wanted. I wanted to meet with the Islamic terrorists. I wanted to find out why they were flying planes into our buildings and celebrating killing us. And they finally arranged it. And I remember, the whole story is told in the title chapter of Tewa Teres, called Tewa Teres. And I remember being bold, which is maybe the reason that Yahweh asked me in the first place. He likes passionate, bold people. Even though I didn't really know him, at that point, you know, yeah, I can't tell you how much he knew about me, but when we began, I know that I was bold and I continued to ask questions and make statements that the translator, during this meeting, said, I can't communicate that to them. You know, they're playing with the triggers of their guns. They're going to kill you. That's what they do. And I remember being bold enough to say, no, go ahead and communicate it. I'm not afraid. And then I remember the host becoming so afraid that he says, we're going to end this now. And he arranged to provide transportation back to the border. And the terrorists, all of them, with their guns, got in a trail car. And I remember getting out of the car. It was middle of the night. And the border was still 100 yards away. It's the fastest I ever ran. And I remember the sense of relief that I just broke down laughing. I was so relieved when I made it to the other side of the border. Now, today, I wouldn't run. Now, as it relates to knowing Yahweh, the process is ongoing. It never ends. I know him better today than I knew him yesterday. And I know him infinitely better now than I knew him 13 years ago. The understanding of what he's offering is also a lifetime of discovery. You know, I know a billion times more than I knew 13 years ago. I know a billionth of what I hope to know 13 years from now. That's what makes life exciting. As for being in a relationship with him, that too is ongoing. There's never a moment where you can say, well, a second ago I was not in a relationship, and now this second I am in a relationship. No, it grows. It develops. You get to know one another. You get to know what one another is like, what you're offering, what you're interested in, what life is like together, and whether or not you like the individual, and whether or not you want to spend time with them, whether or not you trust them, whether you're comfortable with them. And you get to know them. And then that's a process. It's a never-ending process, by the way. I'm still getting to know aspects of Yahweh and my wife, even. And then you move from there to engaging in this relationship, and that too is ongoing. You come to understand more, you read more, you learn more, you converse more, you do more together, and the relationship grows, and the depth of the connections grow. So it's an ongoing thing. So here we are now continuing to learn about Yahweh's promise as it relates to those who engage in doing some of the most important work, which is to expose and condemn religious and political doctrines that lead people away from the truth. And God's saying, if you're going to do this, I'm going to be right there with you. I'm going to protect you. So he says, with his inner wing, he will screen and cover you by her approach. And under his feminine wing, you will continually and genuinely find rest and comfort. His reliable and steadfast truth upon you. It's a shield. And his reliability and trustworthy instruction is upon you. And that's the means to engage, to travel. So here now, he's gone from this feminine manifestation of a wing and a covering and a garment to truth, to shield, to instruction. It's interesting, too, that every one of these next three metaphors are also feminine, just as were the three that preceded it, that inner nature of the joint, of the strong point and the pivot point of a mother bird's feathered wing, this kalak, which is being clothed and covered, being screened and protected, and then kanaf, which is a garment similar to a bird being clothed in feathers. And then he speaks of those things, but with three other feminine concepts that help us understand the role of the set apart spirit, our spiritual mother. Reliable and steadfast truth. Emunah. Dependable honesty. Firm fidelity. Is a shield. A sena. A feminine covering which protects and defends. It's Yahweh's word that protects us. Then it's his emeth, his reliable and trustworthy instruction his dependable honesty, his integrity, his commitment to his testimony, which is real, true, certain, and sure, also feminine. And that if you walk in the words, if you go where the words lead, then that is the safe means to travel. In fact, it is his word that enables us to travel from the corruption of this world to the perfection of his. You want to go from the mundane to the spectacular? You want to go from the physical to the spiritual? You want to go from evil to perfect? You want to go from mortal to immortal? You want to go from estranged to invited into his family and adopted? The means that you travel on that journey is through his word. His words lead there. It is the means to travel. Wa kakhora. It's the means to something that is valuable, which is acquired and transported in a protective mode, also feminine in nature, able to move securely. This verb is from kakar, which is that which goes around to an able movement as a result of a valuable transaction. And then while you won't find it in the Masoretic text, you will find it in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Silah. Pause. Lift this up vocally and instrumentally, letting it sink in before you move on. Yahweh has just told us that that protective wing that he has to clothe us, to protect us, is his word. It's his testimony. It's his instruction. It's the means to engage, to travel. Powerful stuff. He then goes on to say, Dod does, based on this, you should never fear nor respect any part of the terror of the darkness, or any part of the missiles flying about on wings through the air in the daytime, nor the plague ravaging and devastating during the midday light, nor the fatally destructive, contagious, pandemic disease which cuts off and separates, continuously and actually stalking in association with the darkness. God knows just how horrific, demonically inspired human religious schemes are, the terror they impose. Just think of the terror that Christianity has perpetrated on humankind. Today, terrorism is synonymous with Islam. But there was a time when terror was synonymous with socialist secular humanism and communist and fascist and socialist regimes perpetrated the greatest amount of terror on the world. This world has been very dark, with the stain of Nazi Germany, the stain of communist Russia, the stain of communist China, the stain of the Holy Roman Empire of Europe, the stain of the Roman Empire, the stain of Alexander the Great's empire. From the Spartans to the Delian League, even the Greeks. Man has perpetrated grievous acts of terror upon his fellow man. And God is saying, don't fear it, and most certainly don't respect it. Most people cower to terror. They end up respecting terror because they capitulate. He says, don't capitulate, don't fear it. Any part of it. Or the darkness that inspires it, from which it emerges, the darkness of religion and politics, militarism. Don't fear it. Don't respect it. Don't be frightened by it. Don't be awed by it. Don't dread it. Don't revere it. Most certainly don't worship it. Any part of the terror of this darkness. Then he speaks of the military aspect of all this, or any part of the shooting and flying weapons of war. Flying on wings through the air during the daytime. And you know, we're going to be plagued more and more with that. more and more. In fact, you look at the world today, you got the United States dropping bombs on Syrians and Iraqis. You've got the Syrians dropping barrel bombs on their own people. You've got the Ukrainians dropping cluster bombs from airplanes on Russian ethnic Russians. You just have a mess of people flying. And you look at Yemen and Pakistan, where America is flying drones and shooting missiles from those drones. And soon there will be the same drones operating in America and in the skies of Europe, sending missiles down from these winged drones upon innocents. God says, don't fear it. Don't respect it. Don't worship it. Don't dread it. Don't be awed by it. Comes from a place of terrible darkness. He says that this plague of demonically and humanly inspired doctrines is going to ravage and is going to devastate, even in the light of day. He says it's a tasharim, a window into the brightness and into a world that is the opposite of the darkness. Faithfully destructive. Yeah, so Jan was telling us that whether it be the military weapons that are being deployed, the missiles and airplanes flying on their wings, hovering and darting about, brandishing their weapons in the daytime, whether it be that kind of terror or just the darkness of the plague that he has described, which is the malicious motives and deadly rhetoric of men that are ravaging and devastating, that we ought not fear nor respect any of that, not even the fatally destructive and contagious pandemic disease which cuts off and separates. He's not talking about the flu. He's not talking about Ebola. He's not talking about AIDS or HIV. He's not talking about smallpox. He's talking about religion and politics. The most deadly of man's pandemics. Those things that are contagious. They cut off. They separate. They destroy. Kateb. And he says they are continually traveling and stalking in association with the darkness. Hasatan is presented as the advocate of darkness because Yahweh is light. He is the antithesis, the adversary. Men with bad motives, they stalk in the darkness. They speak on behalf of the darkness. Yahweh is light. His words lead to his light, his set-apart spirit. He is enlightening. We read next that he says 1,000 will actually fall over time by your right side and 10,000 by means of your right hand, but it will not approach, touch, or strike you. Now, this is really interesting. He didn't say 1,000 are going to die. Didn't say you're going to kill 1,000. He just says 1,000 will actually fall over time. They'll fall prostrate, out of control, descending to a lower position. So he's saying that those who are going to assail you, ultimately they will trip and fall. They, whether they be humans, whether they be demonic spirits in league with them. He said, Aleph, 1,000. 1,000 men typically following one leader will actually fall over time, will fall prostrate. In the case of Islam, of course, that's really true. Descending to a lower position by your side. And 10,000 by means of your right hand. Now, by means of your right hand could mean just that. And that's the most direct translation of Yamin, by your right hand. But it could also mean to your right side or to yourself. But you think of the right hand. It's the right hand that most people hold the pen. It's through our words that we communicate the truth. We cut Islam and Christianity and Judaism and socialist secular humanism, right to the core, right down to shreds, causing them to fall over time by the words that we write. Yahweh loves the written word. And so by the right hand could well mean, could well be speaking of, I want you to write this down. Call it Prophet of Doom. Call it Yada Yah. Call it an introduction to God. Call it questioning Paul. Write it down. By your right hand they will fall. But he says their evil that they're promoting, it's not going to strike you. Won't approach you, won't strike you. Won't reach you, won't assault you. It's not going to come near you. Nevertheless, uniquely, you will be able to observe with your eyes and see the recompense of the guilty. This is something I have asked Yahweh of that I have expected to be true, which is that while on earth I have no interest in defending myself, I've met with Islamic terrorists, I've met with Al-Qaeda, I've met with Hamas and Hezbollah. I have no interest in ever meeting with them again. I have no interest in engaging them in a fight. I have only an interest in exposing and condemning their religion, their motivations. But I do want to be at their trial. I do want to be at the trial of those who promote Islam. You know, of a modern candidate, the Muslim guy, I want to be at his trial. I want to see him on his knees. I want to be at Muhammad's trial. I want to be at Paul's trial. And guess what God is saying? He says, even though they can't touch you, nevertheless, you're going to be able to observe with your eyes the recompense of the guilty. We're going to get that privilege.